Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you very much, Stephanie, and I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Connect workshop. And today's program is for caregivers, practical tips to cope with your loved one's cancer. And this is part two of a two-part series on living with lung cancer. Now, today's program is a collaborative effort between Cancer Care and many other cancer organizations. And it really is because of our collaboration with both the lung cancer organizations that we've collaborated with, as well as all the other organizations, and your interest in the program that we've been able to reach so many of you on the call today. Now, we have over 679 participants on the call, and you come from all over the United States, from all different parts of the United States. And we also have international participants from Canada, Costa Rica, Egypt, France, Sri Lanka, Tunisia, and United Kingdom. So you really come from all over the world, and we appreciate you being on the call today. Today's activity is supported by Boehringer Ingelheim Pharmaceuticals, Inc., an independent educational grant from Merck and Company, Inc., and Novartis Oncology, and Pfizer Oncology. And I want to thank them for the support of this entire series, and I also want to thank them for their corporate collaboration in making today's program possible and this entire series possible. Now, you did get materials from Cancer Care, and I just want to highlight the evaluation form that you received from Cancer Care. I would ask you all to please complete the evaluation form. You know, your feedback to us is very important with these programs. Otherwise, we would plan programs and really not have a sense of really how helpful they are to you or not. So we very much appreciate your telling us what you think of the programs, and also especially the topics you would like us to offer going forward. That's very important because we are planning a lot of programs for 2015. Indeed, the lung cancer programs that we do, the lung cancer series that we've been offering on a more regular basis, is really a testament to your request for us to offer these series and also to highlight the needs of caregivers as well. So please tell us what you'd like us to do, and we'll try very hard to implement those programs. Now, we have wonderful speakers on our program today, and I want to begin by introducing our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Heather Wakely. Dr. Wakely is Associate Professor, Department of Medicine, Division of Oncology, Stanford University, Stanford Cancer Institute. And Dr. Wakely is going to address an overview of lung cancer and the important role of the caregiver in communicating with the healthcare team. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to Dr. Wakely.
Thank you, Carolyn. It's an honor to be on the call today, and delighted to hear so many people have tuned in. So as Carolyn mentioned, I'm going to just start with a little bit of an overview about lung cancer and lung cancer therapy. I understand that many of you were able to participate in an earlier conference a couple of weeks ago, which went into a lot more detail about that. But the treatment of lung cancer has really been changing drastically over the past few years with a lot of new options available. One of the key differences is that we no longer think about all lung cancer as being the same disease, but much of the time we're able to separate it out into different types of lung cancer based on some of the genetic changes that have happened in the tumor. So most people diagnosed with advanced stage of lung cancer now have testing that can be done to see if there might be particular treatments that are targeted to their cancer. And many of those are actually pill medications, oral medications, which is a big change from our older therapies, which all tend to be given IV. And with the oral medications, it's obviously a very different, it brings up a lot of different issues for the patient and the caregivers, because instead of just going in and seeing the physician and healthcare team once every few weeks and getting all of the treatment at that time and spending the rest of the time just focusing on recovery, now the idea of ongoing continuous care with pills that are taken every day becomes part of that care plan for many patients. And so that's one of the big changes. We've also seen an improvement in how well people are doing overall with lung cancer, which is very exciting. When someone's facing a new lung cancer diagnosis, we still think about it not just on those molecular terms, but also based on the actual stage. So if someone diagnosed at an early stage is going to usually be going through surgery or radiation and maybe some additional molecular testing and maybe some chemotherapy, but a more of a short-term treatment plan, which can be very intense. And people diagnosed with more advanced stages of disease, it's an ongoing treatment. In either situation, though, the role of the caregiver is really, really key. The caregiver obviously pays just a key point, key part for all patients who are living with cancer by providing a key communication with the healthcare team in addition to providing the direct care to the patient. And what I mean by that is when I have a patient coming in to see me, they're usually overwhelmed at the first visit just with this diagnosis and hearing the word cancer, and it's very hard for them to absorb all of the things that we're going through as we talk about their disease and talk about the treatment. And so having a focused caregiver or caregivers to act as an extra pair of ears to really hear what's being said, to be able to then go back through that with the patient at a later time is absolutely critical. Caregivers are also able to observe and help us as the healthcare providers know when a patient is hearing the message or not hearing the message or maybe needs to hear it in slightly different words. They can also reinforce what's being talked about at a visit once the patient gets home and help to remind them, now you know you need to take your medication at this time, or remember we're not supposed to take it with this particular food, to help reinforce the importance of eating and of exercising and all of the things that really are so critical to recovery and health for someone living with cancer, to make sure that that patient stays mindful of those other aspects of their health and not just focus on, okay, let's get the medication I need. Another thing that can be very complicated and overwhelming for patients early in their diagnosis and even as that treatment continues is trying to keep track of everything. Trying to keep track of, well, when is the CT scan due, and when am I supposed to take the medication, and when's the next visit? And so to have an organized caregiver who can help a patient get a calendar together, be able to track, okay, this is what's happening at this point. If someone's going through early stage therapy, they might have radiation as well as chemo, and sort of to help make sure that all of those things stay organized and in place by someone who's not focus solely on just trying to feel better, which would be the patient, but from the caregiver perspective to be able to help keep all of that organized. It's also incredibly helpful to have a caregiver who can help the patient focus in on their goals of what are the key aspects of health and feeling well that are really most important to that patient, and to help them track those symptoms so that when the patient and the caregiver come in to see the healthcare team, they can really have a list and say, you know, on these days I was having issues with nausea, and on these days perhaps some other gastrointestinal issues, and on these days I was just really tired, and to help track that and remember. What I find as a physician is a lot of times patients come in and they want me to know that they're doing okay, and oftentimes they'll downplay some of the symptoms that they've had. I think we've all heard the joke about whenever you bring your car into the mechanic, all of a sudden everything works just fine. Well, we find that as healthcare providers, sometimes that happens when patients come in. All of a sudden, all the things that really were bothering them over the last few weeks no longer seem as important to them. They want to just make it so that we see that they're doing okay and that they should keep going with their therapy. And I don't think it's done intentionally. It's just we all like to feel well and want to feel well. And I think once you come into to see your physician, oftentimes you do feel a little bit better because you're seeing the people you know are trying to help. So to have a caregiver there who could say, well, actually, you're feeling great today, but remember last week when this happened or that happened, that can help us as the care providers really get a better sense of what's been going on over those few weeks since we've last seen the patient, so we can make sure we address all of those symptoms and make sure that we've given the patient the right instructions and medications and tools for thinking about how they can feel the best possible over the weeks to come. And so that's another really, really key role that the care provider and caregiver can give. One part of that is that, especially with the oral medications that more and more patients are on now to as part of their cancer care, sometimes we need to make dose adjustments. And not just in those, but also in the IV therapy. And again, in order to know how best to make the right dose adjustments, we need to have a very accurate, true picture of not just that snapshot of that day in clinic, but how things have really gone over that whole course of time since the last time we got to see someone. And again, the caregiver can be very, very critical for that. Another thing I want to touch on briefly, and I mentioned before, is the importance of food and diet, and I think we'll be hearing more about that today as well. But I bring it up because it's one of the aspects of care that's so important for patients in their feeling well as they focus on their cancer recovery. But it also can become a point of a friction between a patient and their caregivers. And so I just bring that up because it's something that I see probably every day in clinic where there's some friction between a patient and a caregiver around food or around other family members in the patient with food, because food is obviously critical for all of us at all points. But when someone's dealing with cancer and perhaps losing weight, it becomes such a stressful point. And so to be able to talk about that and make sure that's part of the clinic discussion can make a big impact, so that the caregivers can be continuing to support the patient in their desire to maintain their strength and have weight, but without that becoming an overwhelming point of fighting about, oh, you have to eat more, you have to eat more, when the patient's saying they don't want to. And so to make sure that can be something that's talked about with the patient, with the caregiver, with their providers, so that it becomes a focus that's a positive focus and not one that can be a source of friction, which we've seen sometimes. And one of the last things I want to mention is the importance of we've talked about how key the caregiver is, not just in communication, but really in all aspects of the patient's care. But I also want to make sure that the caregivers on the call remember to take time for themselves as well, because it's just so important as a caregiver that you don't run into caregiver fatigue as you give so much to the patient who you're helping. You've got to take that time to take care of yourself so that you can continue to be such a critical resource for the patient that you're helping with. And with that, I'm going to stop and turn it over to some of the other speakers, and we'll be open for questions at the end.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Wakely. That was wonderful and very informative. Thank you. And our next speaker is Dr. Barbara Given. Dr. Given is University Distinguished Professor, Director of the PhD Program, College of Nursing, Michigan State University. And Dr. Given is going to address who is a caregiver, caring for the person with lung cancer, helping to manage your loved one's treatment, and the role of the caregiver in adherence, taking your pills on schedule. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to Dr. Given.
Thank you very much, and welcome to everybody that is on the call. Dr. Wakely did a great job introducing the topic for us today and pointing out the important things that families have to deal with as they go forward. The term caregiver is, as we're using it, as she used it, is a family member, and there are individuals who really do not like the term. However, I think this in this day and age, we want you to like the term because you are a member of the healthcare team. And I think with the new healthcare system that we have, it is important that patients and family members are considered healthcare team members. And as such, then the family caregiver is very important. But as we're using it, as Dr. Wakely used it and as I'm using it, it is someone who's involved in the health care of someone who's needing assistance, in this case, the cancer patient with lung cancer, and it is helping them with the provisions of care that are needed, whether that be administering medications, helping with symptom management, coordinating the care, communicating, as has been talked about before. I think the role that the caregiver carries out depends on, as Dr. Wakely said, the stage of the disease. So there, and it changes across time. So there are certain times where the role of the family caregiver is most involved in direct care, meaning helping with pain management or nausea or vomiting or itching or coughing or shortness of breath. for the lung cancer patients, where for other times it is maybe coordinating with a specialty pharmacy that's necessary to get the medications. Other times it could be transportation. So it is someone who is actively involved in someone who is needing health care, medical care assistance, and it can be a family member or a close friend or a significant other, or sometimes even neighbors get involved with this, but it's someone who's involved in the responsibility. And because the caregiver does so much and is so involved in all the areas, I think that they are the glue that really holds the whole care for a cancer patient together. They are the glue, I believe, that affects the clinical outcomes of the patient. So in other words, whether they get to care in time, if something special happens, as Dr. Wakely said, monitoring the symptoms and the signs that occur to know that the patient is in danger because maybe the signs of infection, so it's time to really go in versus, well, that's not too bad, I can wait another 24 hours or whatever. Again, the family caregiver is someone who supports the patient during this time of cancer treatment across the entire trajectory. Unpaid, available often 24/7, 365, and for lung cancer patients who have a long trajectory, maybe even as long as 24 months. So there's some national data out that caregivers have been active involved for lung cancer patients that long. So then moving on to thinking about the care for the patient, again, Dr. Wakely has pointed out many kinds of things. I think it is important to have the correct information and the amount of information one needs. And so sometimes caregivers have to be pretty assertive in saying, I really need more information to provide the care you're expecting me to do. And sometimes that information that they don't have that they need is, what should I expect? What can I expect? Am I expecting something that's going to go on for a long time? Am I expecting a transition in care? Am I expecting that the patient is going to feel good for a while? Or what is the trajectory that's going to happen? I think with lung cancer, we surely don't want to focus on the whole idea of stigma or regret. The feelings of resentment or anger that much of the literature points out that's there, but to be aware that it could be underlying. And so when we talk about sometimes when there's some conflict, I think the conflict comes from some hidden or deep-seated resentment of what situation they are in. And so I think one has to think about that but not dwell on that. So what caregivers do is extensive, and as I said, they're really a health team member that we see, we do not see because they're hidden, but they're involved very much in today's world with the oral medications in helping to acquire the meds and then dispensing them. Some of the protocols, although not too bad for lung cancer, are really quite difficult, where there's a couple times a day, some weeks on and some weeks off. And so it is, again, the family member who's very involved in helping to manage that. Because the medications are so expensive for lung cancer, the targeted agent, the specialty pharmacies are often the group that dispenses them. And so, again, it is the family member who becomes very involved in getting to the right pharmacy, if there is a pharmacy who carries them, or to deal with the specialty pharmacy if you get them in the mail and they're delivered to your home. The meals and the nutritional assistance has already been mentioned, and I think that we become fixated on eating because that's one thing, as we found in our studies anyhow, that family members think they should be able to do something about. I should be able to get more food in or whatever, even when the patient doesn't feel like eating. We've alluded to the whole idea of supervision and monitoring, an important role of what caring considers for the lung cancer patient. And then we have getting the bills, coordinating the care, scheduling the multiple exams and treatments along with the return to the physician. and the communication, which has been pointed out. And that isn't even talking about the emotional support that is needed for the person who is depressed, the person who's anxious, the person who's having difficulty breathing because they're short of breath, the person who is coughing. So there's a very, very important role in the caring for lung cancer patients that family members have. And they are involved in decision-making, problem-solving, and as you heard before, focusing in on the goals. And it is important that they deal with their own needs and think of their own exercise, their own eating, their own stress management, and their own care, primary care, screening, and all as it goes through. Moving on quickly to the adherence then, we've talked a lot. Again, Dr. Wakely talked about the administration with food. The problem with some of the meds is that you take 2 hours before one eats. With other meds, you take 2 hours after food. What about other meds that patients are on because they have other chronic diseases? What about the side effects from the medication? And then there's a whole list of side effects in addition to the symptoms that individuals have because they have cancer. What we found in the lung cancer patients on the oral drugs, anticipating when the meds are going to run out is a big issue. We have some insurances that will only in the first protocol on the medications only have a couple weeks of medications rather than 30 days. We have other insurance companies that will do 30 days but not 90 days. And so it takes a fair amount of coordination on the part of the family member and the patient really to anticipate when they're going to have to remind everybody that the meds are coming, even though for some pharmacies they're automatically delivered. And then for because they're so costly, there's a whole role with medical assistance and the insurance assistance and the drug company assistance to really help off-pay it. And then there is smaller amounts of copay with these medications. So the family members help manage prescriptions. They need to understand what to expect. They need to understand what is to be expected of the medications as far as goals. Are they only going to try the meds for a couple months, or is this something that's going to be for a six-month period of time or for a longer period of time? And then in all situations, knowing when it is really the time to move on and that it is not treatment that we're worried about, but supportive care and then getting the appropriate supportive care that needs to be there. So I think I'll pass that on now.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Given, and again, lots of excellent information for everybody to think about and to be aware of, and I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A as well. Thank you. And our next speaker is Dr. Guadalupe Palos, and Dr. Palos is a nurse. She's a social worker, and she's a doctor of public health, so she is a bit of her own healthcare team, actually, and she is clinical research manager, Division of Medical Affairs, Department of Cancer Survivorship, the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center. Dr. Palos is going to address managing family, friends, partners, and traditions, coping with the stresses of caregiving, self-care tips, and coping with holidays, birthdays, and special occasions. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Dr. Palos.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Carolyn, for that introduction. It's a pleasure to be a part of this panel and to share such important information with you, our listeners. Dr. Wakely provided excellent background for understanding just how the complexity of caring for a patient diagnosed with lung cancer and how it affects the caregiver and their family. Dr. Givens gave us a clear definition of who's considered a caregiver, and again, the many challenging tasks and activities that the caregiver is involved in when helping their loved one deal with this disease. One important message that evolved from both speakers is that being a family or an informal caregiver requires knowledge, skills, time, and commitment. So we recognize that caregiving is a dynamic experience, but particularly for a chronic illness such as cancer. So there are acute and chronic stages which involve several transitions across the trajectory of the illness. And with those transitions, the needs of our loved one diagnosed with lung cancer will change. And as those needs change, the roles, responsibilities, and functions of a caregiver will also change. So in the next few moments, I'm going to focus on three areas. First, I'm going to describe some methods that you might want to use to create a caregiving team, much like Dr. Givens described, comprised of family, friends, neighbors, or acquaintances, perhaps maybe from your faith-based organizations or local community services. Then I will outline some tips on how to cope with the stressors associated with being a caregiver, such as fatigue, sleep problems, sadness, or other similar types of emotions. And then I'll summarize by presenting self-care tips that caregivers and families can use during the upcoming holidays, as well as to prepare for birthdays and other special occasions. The questions that many caregivers ask is, how can I involve other family members, friends, and neighbors in the caregiving experience? This is particularly challenging because of the chronicity of cancer. We find that caregivers often have more support during the initial phase, as when one is just initially diagnosed with cancer and going through treatment. And that support can come not only from organizations, but also from family and friends and people that, you know, might drop by with a meal or something like that during that initial phase. However, that support often lessens or disappears completely as the disease lingers. And that is when the caregiver is apt to feel even more so the burden and responsibility of being a caregiver. So what are some steps that you can take to keep folks involved or to get people involved? First of all, try to widen the circle of caregivers. That is, as neighbors, people from your place of worship, or even from the local community centers for help. It's normal to feel reluctant, sometimes maybe even embarrassed about asking for help, but stay focused on your goal, which is to increase your support for caregiving. You can also look around your own family and say, okay, you know, have I included parents, grandparents, siblings, extended family members such as cousins, aunts, and you know, you can ask them. And then once you can engage people to become part of that circle, discuss what they are willing to do, what they can do, and when they can do it. It's also a good time to outline what you feel that you can expect of them and the time commitment needed from them. You want their help, but you also want their help in a very tangible way that is going to be helpful for you and also help them to feel that they are truly being of assistance to you when it's needed. Hold caregiver meetings. That's important also because that keeps the communication going. And again, it also helps as the needs change during the experience of the disease. So it's also a good time to identify roles, responsibilities, assignments, schedules, and backup plans. And you might even want to make copies of plans or write down things like the schedules and the activities that are going to be done, and then hand those out to folks so that there'll be clarity and communication about the important tasks. Another new idea, you know, many of us are very techie and you like to use social media. So if you can, use the social media to communicate with your caregiver team. You can Twitter or you can use the internet to communicate about needs. There's also an interesting online service called Lots of Hands that can help coordinate services and efforts. And that was really addressed in Dr. Givens' discussion about all the complex things that come about in coordinating appointments and medications and all the other activities. And I just want to remind us ourselves that our families in America are rapidly changing. We have single head of households, and many times those house, you know, there may be long distance caregiving that's going to be involved, and when is one of our other speakers is going to address that in a moment. But there's also non-English speaking families that need help. There's military families, again, that may be by themselves or be very much separated from their loved ones. And also there's previously unseen groups, such as our LGBT families. So there are resources for these groups. And once again, I will refer you, I'd like to refer you to a website. It's ARP, and they have specific resources for non-English speakers, such as like the AT&T language line, and then finding LGBT-friendly care for folks like at the Family Caregiver Alliance. Now, I'm going to give you a tip that maybe sounds a bit outrageous, but I would recommend trying it. Don't let family members say no to you or allow others to call or cancel at the last moment, unless it's a really big emergency. When someone says that they will be a caregiver, I mean, will help you in the caregiving experience, it almost becomes a covenant between the invitee and the inviter. So treat it as such. Let folks know the importance their role is as a member of the circle and how much you are depending on them. Remember, if you take this bond seriously, so will others. And I also would like to remind our listeners that people like to help, and if given a chance, most likely they will say yes. So this expanded network or circle of caregivers will help you, the caregiver, to lessen your caregiver burden. It will also help your family family member or your loved one who's the patient. They'll benefit because they'll have a happier and healthier caregiver, and then they'll also have an opportunity to interact with other folks who come in and out as caregivers. The second area that I'd like to focus on talks about ways or addresses ways to cope with stressors. As we all recognize, caregiving takes a great deal of physical and emotional stamina. It is both, not just the emotional, but also it can be a strain taking care of someone, especially if you're having to lift or move wheelchairs or oxygen tanks and all of those other kinds of things. So caregiver responsibilities can contribute to caregiver burden, which includes high level of feeling distressed, fatigued, and even having loss of sleep. Studies have also shown that patient outcomes are not as positive when a caregiver is in poor physical or emotional health. So being a healthy caregiver is critical to this caregiver, to this cancer experience. So one important self-strategy is to monitor oneself for signs of stress. And I'm just going to mention a couple of things, almost like a checklist that you can ask yourself. Have you found yourself suffering more from persistent headaches? Is there more neck and shoulder tightness, mood swings, crying spells, irritability, and sadness? Have you noticed that more about yourself? Is there more poor concentration, forgetfulness, perhaps a negative attitude? If you were a very busy, productive, high-productive person, have you noticed now that you're having low productivity? Do you have feelings of isolation, upset stomachs all the time, or even now being diagnosed with high blood pressure? Those are all warning signs that your body is giving you. So if you notice those signs and symptoms, remember there are things you can do to take care of yourself, and we'll address those in just a moment. So let's move on then now. When we're talking about all these signs that come up, some of us are going to be feeling them anyway because of the holidays. So some of those are going to be normal. But if you notice that you're experiencing some of those signs and symptoms a bit more, then, of course, it's good to seek medical advice or help. But during these times, you know, you may wonder, how do we celebrate a special occasion when our lives have been interrupted by cancer? And especially if a loved one has just been newly diagnosed, is undergoing all those treatments, trying to, you know, adhere to all those medications and schedules that are there, and then also perhaps dealing with the side effects from the treatment of the disease. It's true that there are times when the word special occasion can stir up different types of feelings and thoughts. Special occasions are meant to be good times, you know, and they bring, you know, really good memories to our mind. Memories associated perhaps with a special birthday or an anniversary, the excitement of seeing relatives and friends we haven't seen for a while, or the anticipation of preparing certain traditions that we associate with those special events. Thoughts like this can be in our mind, and then all of a sudden they can be abruptly interrupted when we say, oh yeah, that was before this whole cancer business came into play. This was when life was normal. So instantly a person can go from having fond memories about a special occasion to feelings of perhaps fear or dread about the pending occasion. It may be a time when patients, caregivers, and their families may ask, how do we keep things normal when dealing with all of this? All of this refers to the family's roles and responsibilities that are associated with caring for a loved one with cancer and coping with the special occasions that come up throughout the year and especially these next few months. So there is no doubt that holidays have a different meaning for us when someone we love is dealing with cancer and its treatment. And again, the caregiver is going to be often in a particularly challenging position during the holidays. Caregivers may often feel that they must keep up with the traditions they have had in the past while continuing these usual caregiver activities. And trying to maintain so many roles and responsibilities is a journey that leads to multiple complex challenges for the patient and for the caregiver. But with preparation, planning, and a little bit of preventive action, the holidays can be a time to develop new traditions and new memories for patients and their caregivers. So there is no doubt that being a caregiver can be both challenging and rewarding. So the most common challenges that caregivers face during special occasions are, first, how to say no to some of the new roles or some of the old roles that they had before, and not feeling guilty about saying no and not fulfilling their old roles, and then being hesitant to ask for help at a time or time off from a traditional role. Another challenge relates to changes that may occur in the caregiver's physical or mental health as they try to cope with all the roles of being a caregiver and preparing to celebrate a special occasion. Again, the caregivers can experience an increase in fatigue and a decrease in sleep, and they can even experience great sadness or distress or a feeling of loss for the old times. On the other hand, there are times when a caregiver can discover new strengths or resources they weren't aware of before. In fact, this has often been called resiliency, where people find their own strengths or their family's strengths that they have. It is clear that during these times, a caregiver may need to trade off traditional roles for new roles. For example, perhaps this is the year you don't bake. Instead of your new role will be to order a dinner, or another family member can be the one to prepare the meal. Or this is the year that perhaps you celebrate your anniversary or birthday at home instead of planning a faraway trip. So by now, it may be apparent that there are many unknowns surrounding the topic of how to cope with a special occasion. And again, there's no agreement on the definition of what exactly a caregiver is. I know Dr. Givens gave a beautiful example of what one is, but a caregiver can also be a child. We've had children sometimes that end up being caregivers, especially when families are by themselves or isolated. So it's critical for you as caregivers and patients to speak with each other about your preferences for dealing with that upcoming special event. It's also important to communicate with your healthcare providers. Let them know there's a special event coming up. They may be willing to be flexible on appointments and on medication adherence and some other things that you feel is tying you down to not being able to celebrate the way you'd like to. Again, because the holidays are often associated with stress, I'd like to outline a few self-care methods to help deal with that. Pay attention to your physical and mental health. Ask for health care or seek medical advice if needed. Find time to relax, exercise, slow down, or just stop for a moment. Be sure to continue being organized or get organized if you haven't had a chance to. Learn to say no without feeling guilty. Connect with your friends, and stay positive. So in closing, I just want to remind you that caregiver burden or burnout is a growing public health concern. We are seeing more attention focused on the risk to a caregiver's physical and emotional health and the impact of unhealthy caregivers on the outcomes of the patients they are caring for. Caregiver burden also affects the entire family. It is a domino effect. This issue has become such a concern that November is designated as National Family Caregiver Month. So I encourage you to be on the lookout for PSAs that focus on the caregiver experience. Thank you, and this concludes my remarks.
Thank you very much, Dr. Palos. And this is indeed National Caregivers Month, and this program is offered in many ways to kind of acknowledge that. We know that caregiving occurs throughout the year, but especially we want to acknowledge all of you during this particular month as well, throughout the entire year. And Dr. Palos has given some just wonderful tips and suggestions and thoughts to use in as a caregiver. So thank you. And our next speaker is Mr. Wynn Burkle. And Mr. Burkle is an oncology social worker. He is the Director of Social Service of Long Island, the Lung Cancer Program Coordinator for Cancer Care. And Mr. Burkle is going to address the issue of long-distance caregiving, Cancer Care's free psychosocial services, and the role of support groups. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Mr. Burkle.
Thank you, Carolyn. I'm sure most of us remember the time we moved into our first new home or even our last new home. And I'm sure we wondered how we were ever going to find our way in this new community or neighborhood. Many of us were fortunate enough to get a visit from the welcome wagon, or maybe a very helpful neighbor who helped us find the nearest supermarket, service station, house of worship, school, and all the other services so essential to support our daily life. The more things we were able to connect to in our new neighborhood, the more we felt that we had things under control. Being diagnosed with lung cancer is, in some ways, very much like moving into a new neighborhood. Our cancer pushes us into a strange and sometimes scary new environment, and we really don't know where anything is and what we can do to get some control over a very difficult change in our lives. Cancer care serves in the role of that good neighbor to help patients and caregivers exist in the new neighborhood of lung cancer. Cancer care knows that when we talk about caregivers in the new neighborhood, we're not just talking about a patient and caregiver living in the same house or even around the corner from each other. We know that many caregivers and patients can be a continent apart, such as the case when mom, the patient, lives in Seattle and her son, the caregiver, lives and works in Atlanta. In our many years of working with families across the country, we've learned how to help caregivers and patients bridge the miles between them. Our oncology social workers on the Cancer Care Helpline can help the caregiver learn about all kinds of helpful resources that may be available to the patient in their home community. They can assist the caregiver in establishing effective communications with their patient's healthcare team and help the caregiver in providing empathic and caring support to their loved ones with cancer. Cancer Care is there as a good neighbor no matter where you may be. Cancer Care and the role of that good neighbor provides its popular website, www.lungcancer.org, to better serve people like you. Rather than burden folks with heavy medical jargon, lungcancer.org has been designed as a first stop for folks who find themselves in the new and strange neighborhood of lung cancer. Using simple-to-understand language in a user-friendly web page format, lungcancer.org helps patients and those who care for them. And there is a special section on clinical trials, which not only helps one learn what they're all about, but also provides a special search tool which can assist in finding the lung cancer clinical trial that matches each patient's individual situation. And if a patient wishes to become involved in a clinical trial, there is a tool that allows them to connect with a specially trained clinical trials manager to help them with that whole process. In addition, lungcancer.org, Cancer Care's other website, serves as an easy entrance to connect with the many services which Cancer Care has available free of charge for lung cancer patients and those who care for them, including services such as education. Cancer Care's many Connect Education workshops provide both workshops on coping with the physical and emotional impact of cancer, such as today's workshop, and disease-specific information, such as we were able to present and hear in our first lung cancer workshop back on November 4th. Cancer Care's well-known Cancer Care Connect booklets are available free of charge and are packed with up-to-date information on treatments and the latest coping strategies to help cancer patients and those who care for them. We're pleased to report that we've distributed millions of these very popular publications. Cancer Care's website at www.cancercare.org presents a wealth of information on cancer topics. Cancer Care provides supportive services through the professionally trained staff of experienced oncology social workers who are there to assist folks like you in dealing with the many issues which arise from the diagnosis of lung cancer for both patient and caregiver, including emotional issues in which the social workers are able to assess clients' needs and provide them with the appropriate helpful psychosocial interventions. In dealing with practical issues such as financial assistance, which we can assist through Cancer Care's limited financial assistance program and referrals to Cancer Care's Co-Pay Assistance Foundation and other financial assistance resources. Practical issues in terms of being able to refer folks to the many organizations and agencies that are established to help cancer patients and caregivers. And practical assistance in navigating the system in this strange new world, new neighborhood of lung cancer, and understanding how to best manage the many new relationships involved in healthcare and communications with them. And help with social issues and dealing with cancer's impact among family members, friends, the community, and the workplace. Cancer Care's social workers provide this assistance in a variety of friendly settings, such as individual counseling, which we provide face-to-face in the New York Tri-State metro area, as well as online and telephone counseling across the nation. Support groups, again, provided face-to-face in the New York metro area and online and telephone for those in the rest of the country. You know, our popular caregiver support groups, whether experienced in a face-to-face, or online, or telephone modality. Provide the caregiver with a very safe place in which they can share the burdens, feelings, and stress of the caregiver's role with others who are involved in a very similar situation. You know, there's no need to explain yourself in a support group. They know what you're talking about. Caregivers share best care for their loved ones as well as how to best care for themselves. So many of our caregivers talk about belonging to that special family which helps them carry on the caregiving role each day. The professional facilitative skills of Cancer Care's social workers ensure that each caregiver support group is maintained as a special place for each and every support group member. Call us today to learn more about this wonderful resource. You know, I'm sure none of us ever expected to find ourselves and our loved ones moved to the neighborhood of lung cancer. But now that you're here, be assured that Cancer Care, like that good neighbor, is there with you. Connect with us at www.cancercare.org or calling us at 1-800-813-HOPE, H-O-P-E. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Wynn. That was wonderful, and thank you for being so comprehensive. And now we have time for questions. We actually have a lot of time for questions, and I'm going to ask Stephanie to explain to all of you how to queue up for questions and to bring all of our speakers on board, and we will take as many of your questions as possible. And if we don't get to your question, we will have you call us at the end of the call at 1-800-813-HOPE, and I'll repeat that number as we get closer to the end of the call. But let's see how many of your questions we can take right now. Stephanie?
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered and you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Those of you on the web may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question. Again, please press star then one to ask a question.
And we have a question from one of our online participants. And that the question is there a foolproof way to remember to give my loved one the right medications at the right time? Dr. Given, could you address that? That's an excellent question, and we're going to try to answer it the best we can. And Dr. Given, would you like to comment?
Probably foolproof would probably not be true. It depends on the medication. There are a variety of devices out that one can put medications in and that you can organize by hours, times of the day, and the month. There's some of these that are electronic that beepers go off or little notes go off like on smartphones. However, with a number of the oral cancer drugs that are out, a number of them would indicate that they are not to be removed from their blister packs, if they're in blister packs, or they're not to be removed from their container and put in those. So you really have to read the instructions or have your nurses and physicians tell you whether or not your pharmacist, whether your medications can be removed. There are a number of apps out there now for reminders that you can set or that you can actually subscribe to services that will remind you that it's time to for your loved one to take a medication or remind your loved one to take the medication and then notify you if, in fact, the medication has been taken. So there are a number of things there. I would say the smartest thing would be to talk to the pharmacist or the specialty pharmacies who distribute it, and then foolproof, well, it's still a matter of do you have the right medications at the right place at the right time. And I think starting every day, planning where you will be, where the meds are, and do you have enough meds and everything is the most important. Some people like diaries and checking them off. Again, there's a number of apps out to really do that. But it really takes a lot of coordination of care to really make it happen every day, every time, on time.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Given. And there is another, you know, we were talking before the call started, all the speakers, about just the different weather conditions in different parts of the country. And so, Dr. Given, could you comment on that? Because, indeed, as winter in some parts of the country is approaching or as different weather systems are occurring, in terms of just planning ahead for medication, especially if there's some weather predictions that are coming that are of concern to one.
Well, the weather is certainly a big issue, and I think our postal system is also another big issue that our patients have had. In Michigan, a number of smaller community post offices are being shut down, and so it's now taking an extra day or two for the medications to come. So I think having, again, reminders, actually putting on calendars, if you use smartphones or any devices, that the medication is going to run out on Thursday the 10th, and then actually making sure that the medication is available on Tuesday the 9th, and thinking of that is really, really important to do. And how the medication is delivered, because in this community, sometimes they're actually delivered to the home by a delivery system. Other times, if it's a specialty pharmacy, it's by mail, and other times you go into a cancer center and pick them up when they become available. So all those take a fair amount of planning and coordination.
Excellent. Thank you so much. This is really very informative. And we have a question, another one from one of our online participants, from Brenda. Suggestions on how to allow outside help when the person with lung cancer is resistant to accepting help, but the caregiver is very accepting of help. Dr. Palos, could you address that one or start to address that one?
Sir, I'll try, because that certainly is something that I've heard as a concern for the caregivers, and then also from the patient themselves, because the patient will say, you know, I want to maintain my privacy. I don't want folks to see me how I am right now. But I believe that one of the things that would be beneficial is for you and the caregiver and the patient to sit down and just talk about what some of that resistance is all about, and how some ways to address it. For example, if it's because you don't feel comfortable having someone see you the way you are right now, you can perhaps dress up a certain way, you know, make yourself more presentable. I think that's one of the things. Some of the patients say, oh, I don't want them to see me when my hair is not this way, or I'm wearing this kind of clothes, or I'm in my bathroom and I'm comfortable. So there's some other ways that you can address that. The other is just, again, I think I had spoken about it earlier, some of the embarrassment that goes along with letting someone see someone when they're so vulnerable. But look at the goal, I think is the main thing. The goal is that you want to have the patient receive the best care possible, and you want to be able to be a caregiver who can provide that. But there are times that you are going to need, as the caregiver, you're going to need respite and you're going to need help. So if the patient can recognize that, you know, that that caregiver also is going through some hardships, I think that would be helpful also. But the main thing is just sit down and just be candid about what some of those, where those reluctance is stemming from, and that would be helpful.
Excellent. And Wynn, did you want to add anything as well?
No, I certainly like the idea of looking at the goal, and I think probably getting the patient involved in achieving the goal can be a way that moves that along. So if the patient also thinks they're working along the goal for the best care and realizes that the care gets better by bringing someone in, I think it becomes a win-win situation. Pardon the pun, but...
Excellent. Thank you. And we have another question in front of our online participants who's asking really about flu shots at this time of year. Dr. Wakely, if you could address this concept of flu shots or immunizations in general at this time of year and recommendations, just general recommendations.
Sure. So we do strongly recommend that all cancer patients get the influenza vaccine, the flu shot, and that most care providers actually get that as well, because the caregivers are going to be spending a lot of time with the cancer patients. It's just critical that they stay healthy as well. And what we have at our cancer center is patients who are coming in can get their flu shot on the same day that they're getting chemotherapy. That's not a problem. So you don't need to worry about not getting it on the same day as the treatment. It's easy to do. A lot of people also find it just more convenient to go into the local drugstore to get their flu vaccine there. So whatever works, but we do strongly recommend that most patients undergoing cancer care also get a flu vaccine, and that the caregivers do so as well. And that's also true for the pneumonia vaccine for patients who haven't had that. That's usually recommended also. It's a once every 5 year as opposed to a once a year shot. The only vaccine that's not usually indicated for most cancer patients is the shingles vaccine, because that's a live virus vaccine, so we do not recommend that one.
And are there some types of flu shots that are also are there also something for the flu that could be live or not, nasal or the...
Right, the nasal one is a live virus, and so we usually do not recommend that either for most cancer patients. Again, there are always going to be exceptions, and it's important that the patient and the caregivers speak to the individual, you know, care providers about the specific situation. But in general, the inhaled one is not recommended because it is a live virus, but the injections are always safe.
Excellent. So please do take this information back to your healthcare provider, and this is important information for everyone to have. I want to thank our speakers. It's just been remarkable. It's just been an amazing workshop today. There's a question here. There's one more online question. Is it okay for the caregiver to get the shingles vaccine, Dr. Wakely?
It's hard to generalize that one. It's a little bit tougher. I think it's best to have that discussion with the I realize that for the caregiver, it's not their physician. It's going to be the physician for the patient that they're helping to care for. But it would be good to ask. Sometimes that will be fine, but it's good to just double check. It's going to depend on the specifics of the care that individual patient is receiving right then and how susceptible they might be.
Very sophisticated audience. I really appreciate these are good questions. We want you to ask the questions here and then go back to your treating healthcare team with them. So thank you so much. I want to thank our speakers. You've been a remarkable team of speakers. Thank you. And I want to thank all of you who've queued up and asked questions online, actually, and really asked such excellent questions, and those of you who've been listening as well. Now, I do recognize that you may have more questions that you wish to ask, and I do want to remind all of you that the Cancer Care Helpline is available to you at 1-800-813-HOPE, and our oncology social workers are here to help you, both with practical and financial issues, with counseling questions, with getting counseling from us, with support groups, both telephone and online groups, and also for getting information or helping you to get information or frame your questions to your doctor. So we will help you often to think about the questions you want to ask your healthcare team. We also have these workshops, of course, that happen quite regularly, as well as publications that are available that you can access, and of course our website. Most importantly, as we conclude this program today, I don't want any of you to think that you're alone in coping with lung cancer, in coping as a caregiver, in coping with cancer in general. I want you to now know that you are part of the cancer care community, and in that respect, we are here for you. You can call us anytime. We try very hard to get back to you as quickly as possible, and we have an outstanding staff of oncology social workers here, much like Wynn Burkle, as you've heard his concern and compassion, and they are here with great expertise to help you with the issues and questions you may have. So please do call us, and I think as we've all acknowledged, this is, for everybody, a complex time of year. It's kind of a holiday time of year, but it presents its own particular stresses. Plus, as a caregiver, there are other stresses that you have in caregiving. So please do take advantage of support, and asking for help is a great strength, and it's so we're here for you. I want to thank you all, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all for participating.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop. You may now disconnect, and everyone have a wonderful day.